Okay.
The squeakier, the better. Okay. So.
You guys are good. You guys are live.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. MYG Muslim Youth Group of ISOC. What is up? Another beautiful, blessed Friday night with three of your favorite people. We got Sister Nadia. We got, unfortunately, we got me again. I don't know how I got on here. Brother Hassan, and we also have a guest speaker for tonight. Now, before we begin, I just want to make some ground rules. I know today we have a sensitive topic about drugs. So for those that have questions that maybe want to cover their name, like, you guys could also join our Zoom. And if you want to come in as like an anonymous name, that's totally okay. This is a judgment-free zone. We understand people are going through things, and we're not here to exclude anyone. We're here so everyone's included. And if you're a parent, student, working professional, this whole event is all for you guys. So feel free, don't be shy. I'm very, very excited about tonight. And if you guys have questions, we'll have a Q&A at the end. But we have a beautiful brother here tonight that's actually going to be doing the event for us. So I'm very excited. So I'm going to pass it off to Sister Nadia, our secretary of MYG. She's actually, oh, by the way, if you guys stay for the whole event, we're actually going to be telling you guys what our next week event is, which is really, really exciting. So Sister Nadia, it's all you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Trapped, a talk about drugs, intoxicants, and peer pressure hosted by MYG of ISOC. Leading this talk will be Brother Janara Wahid, who is the Resource Development Manager at Sahaba Initiative. Brother Wahid, I'll pass the mic on to you so we can get started.
Okay, thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. La ilaha illallah Muhammad ar-Rasul Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. That is, I bear witness there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is a slave servant of Allah. I greet you in the universal language of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And I hope everyone is doing well. To start it off, I really would like to just probably go into some terms. I like to use definitions, because what happens a lot of time is when you talk about things, some people come up with their own understanding of what you're saying. So these are just four little terms, and throughout the night, we're going to be using them. So just keep in mind that these are terms. Some of them are defined by the rule books, and some of them are just defined by me. So some of these are kind of like my terms in which I use. So you can understand some of the ways in which I use my language, okay? So the first one is capacity, okay? Capacity is dealing with, especially relating to drugs. It means that from 100% brain function is your capacity. Anything below that is not capacity. So when we talk about drug and drug addiction, I'm going to use the term capacity just to describe the ability of a person to function at 100%. Another thing is we're going to use the word drugs a lot. Now, when we talk about drugs, I use it indiscriminately, using as anything that takes you away from Allah. I used to have a different terminology for drugs, but I mean, once you start seeing gambling, video game addiction, you start coming to the reality that, you know, you can become addicted to anything. Another word, which most people might disagree with, I use the word, people use the word lie or lying, someone who lies. The way I describe it is intentionally tries to deceive. Now, you're going to find this word being used a lot in drug and drug addiction, because the person you're deceiving is usually yourself. And sometimes you're not aware that you're intentionally trying to deceive yourself to continue that behavior. The last word I'm going to bring up is enrichment. The reason I want to talk about enrichment real briefly is because I use it in the sense of when you think of something enriching you, I'll use the example of white bread, right? Like Wonder Bread. You'll look on a thing and it says going through the enrichment process. Now, what they do in their enrichment process, they take 100% of the nutrients away from this and they replace it with 10%. Now, this enrichment process, we think we're getting more, but actually it is taking away more. Okay, those are just four definitions. And we're going to do another thing, which is misunderstanding with drugs. Now, the reason I do this is just 5 points, very simple. Mm-hmm. These are just misconceptions, misunderstandings about drug and drug addiction. So number one, I use this as number one because sometimes we believe that this don't affect us. So the number one misconception, I believe, is there's no side effects. So anything you put into your body, there's a side effect. You drink too much water, there's a side effect, whether it's just you going to the bathroom a lot. So there is a side effect. And if you, there's always a side effect. And you got to be able to take that into consideration, right?
I got to go to the restroom. I'll be right back, sir.
Yeah. So the other thing is, poor people are the ones that do drugs. This is another misconception. Sometimes we think that only poor people do drugs. Another one is I just do it once in a while. So some things people think addiction to drugs doesn't mean that you do it every 24 hours, every 5 hours or whatever. Drug addiction means it consumes you. So you're going to do it, whether it's every 2 months, once a month, it consumes you and consumes your lifestyle. So saying that you only do it once in a while doesn't really mean anything. Another misconception is I did it and I don't think I look like a druggie, right? So someone did something once. It's kind of like Xena, for example. You committed it and nothing changed, right? So what changes within you is not out. It's not outside. No one can really see the signs that you did drugs one time. Your mom not going to look at you and say, ah, voila, caught you. You did it. There's no magical thing. Nothing really changes once you do it. Another one is the people I see don't look crazy. So the people who you know who are doing the drug, they might be the popular kids or the kids that looks very affluent or happy or seem to be very liked, and they do drugs and they don't look all crazy like the person on the streets begging for change. So you assume that they look like they're prestigious, so I can do it and it won't have any negative effects. So that's just so you get grounded in some misconceptions. The next thing I'm going to do is give you some quick facts about drugs and drug addiction, all right? And one of the things I want to keep in mind is how in the Western society, how it's everywhere. There's no other way to put it, right? The statistics use what we call substance. And it says over 19.7 million American adults between the ages of 12 and older deal with what we call a substance disorder. Almost 74% of adults suffer for a substance disorder, 74%. So the way to think about statistics sometimes is to think of, if they say 74 or 70%, you can imagine maybe if you're being lenient, 10 people, and then you say six of them have this issue. So this is the way to visual kind of imagine those people with these issues. Mm. Another statistics that you can keep in mind is 38% of adults will say they have a disorder or are they struggling with drug addiction, right? Another statistics is 8.5 of Americans suffer with both mental health disorder and a substance abuse. And then sometimes they call this co-occurrence disorder, right? So a lot of times what happens is someone has a mental health issue and they are doing drugs maybe to cover it or to fit in better. Maybe they have anxiety and they feel as though when they drink or do drugs that they can kind of fit in better and they're less anxiety. And that's one of the things that keep in mind that some people, and like in African-American culture, it's better for you to be known as an alcoholic than a drug addict. I'm sorry, an alcoholic than someone who has a mental health issue. A lot of times what happens is this, it's easier to be known for one and not the other. So use one to cover the other. So keep that in mind sometimes, because sometimes you have a mental health issue and you're afraid the people to know about your mental health issue. So you cover it with sin, which is terrible. You know, maybe you become an alcoholic, drug addict, or do other things so people don't recognize your mental health issue.
You know, some people also say it's better to smoke weed than it is to become an alcoholic.
Well, weed is something I'm going to touch on separately because that's kind of like a touchy, real touchy one, right?
Gotcha.
Another one, drug abuse and drug addiction. And this is one that for the people who are keeping note of how much this stuff costs to society, they have a number. They said $704 billion annually is lost in workplace, health expenses, and criminal related costs. Now, these are just some quick facts. There's nothing you know, we can get into a little more into the weeds a little bit later, but this is some information. And one of the things here I found is they wrote the causes of addiction. Now, one thing to keep in mind, nothing about any disorder, because drug addiction is a mental health issue as well. So we won't don't want to kind of glance over the fact that once you become a drug addict, that you're suffering from a mental health issue. When they talk about co-occurrence, they're actually saying that you have a drug addiction and the mental health issue is there as well. So when they talk about causes, there's no specific one thing that causes people to do drugs. I don't want people to turn into, oh, I see this person doing this and all of a sudden he's going to be a drug addict, right? There's no guaranteed way that a person just will magically going to become a drug addict. But keep that in mind. But there are risky behaviors or things that put you at a higher risk of becoming a drug addict. And I'm not going to really use the causes here that they put. I'm just going to tell you a short story, right? One thing that people might keep in mind that your friends can determine a lot of things in your life. And one of the short stories I was going to remind you of is something simple. And they tell you, everybody heard the story of maybe what Little Red Riding Hood, right? And as she runs through the forest with her hood on, she ran into the wolf. And there are certain signs that the wolf is a wolf, right? When she's in the house. The first sign, what big hands you have, what big mouth you have, what big this, what big that. Same thing with causes. You'll find symptoms or problems in, maybe in your family. Maybe you have a mental health issue. Maybe you have, in some cases, you had an injury and the doctor prescribed some medication for you so that you can heal or feel better or feel less pain. And this happens in the Muslim community, in every community. But and you start taking these medications and they're prescription medication. And all of a sudden you find yourself wanting the prescription medications a lot to the point where you're actually going to buy them. So this is one of the ways where we can see that you lead up into it. Another way, which goes back to your friends. It goes back to the people you're around, your associates. Now, if you're around people who will allow you to do certain things, who commit certain sins, then it's more likely for them to have, how would you say, won't say anything when you engage in risky behavior. And this is a challenge that we all face in any, whether you're a child or adult, right? Just to cover just some remedies, because all I really wanted to do is touch on this generally, because we all know something about drugs. We all have experience. I can go into what each drug is and everything else, but I'd rather just give you some information and then go into the questions and answer. But one last thing, I want to make sure I give you remedies. So one of the things to keep in mind, if you have some family member who's suffering from drug or alcohol, is to be supportive of them and not their habits. Okay? And this is a very difficult thing. Be supportive of them and not their habits. Another thing is to keep in mind, if you're or your friends are dealing with drug or alcohol addiction, there's help and there's always people who will help you. And making sure you turn to those people who have that information or knowledge to get help. I work with an organization called Sahaba Initiative. We started off dealing with one brother who had a drug addiction problem. So if you can imagine, this organization has grown from helping one person to maybe helping 300 people a month to 400 people a month, all behind helping one person with a drug addiction problem. We work with a lot of different programs, one of the programs for addiction for Muslims. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah.
This is called Malate Islam, The Path to Peace. This is a book that we use for our NA and AA classes. So you can find this online. I'm making sure the picture is big so people can see it.
Yeah.
Look up the book, find it, find some solutions, right? So this book we've been using for about 12 years now, but also there's meetings every Wednesday. Once you type up Malate Islam, you're able to find out about meetings and you're able to get some help and find other Muslims that's going through the same issue as well. Another thing to talk about when there's actually 1-800 numbers for drug or alcohol centers that can get some families some help. One of the numbers I'm going to, I don't know how to put this up here. I
might you could probably put it in the chat group and then we can also pass it out to the.
Okay. I'm going to put it in the chat group because I'm going to put a couple of numbers on here just so that if anyone has, you can't talk about problems without giving people solutions. This is critical. You can't tell, like if I mention suicide, I got to put the suicide helpline on. Why? Because when you hear the statistics of certain things, you got to realize your community is suffering, right? Those statistics are not just pulled from the air. There's Muslims who's going through this as well. It doesn't make you not Muslim because you're going through it. If you have a mental health issue, it's the same as you broke a leg or something, or if you were born with some kind of body disformity, it doesn't take you out of the realm of Islam. There's remedies for it. So I'm going to put the number here for the helpline first. And then we can, I'll go ahead and end what I'm talking about, and then we can go into question and answer as I type this up. I don't want to.
And as you're typing that up, for those that you guys don't know, Brother Wahid is actually part of Sahaba Initiative. I mean, they do a bunch of different things. They do feedings for the poor. I just saw recently that you guys could check out their Instagram as well. If it's just Sahaba Initiative, they also have a website. They do counseling services every Saturday. They do a food pantry. And just like he said, they do the AA and NA, services as well. So it's very, very cool. When did you guys get started with this initiative?
How long so we started in probably about 12 years ago. You know, it's very interesting. Keep in mind, right, that when one of our founders, right, one of the brothers along with me, he started when he was 16, 17. We started doing this. I actually had to get his dad permission to take him out with me, right?
Wow.
So you can imagine the brother now, he's old, right?
Yeah.
But your age isn't the issue, right? If you want to do good, don't let your age be an issue.
Yeah.
Get started right away and start doing good, you know, because you do the work and Allah will multiply it for you, right? That's where the hasana come in. You do the work and Allah would take over from there. Any good works, Allah would multiply it for you, inshallah.
I love it. And by the way, so we got one question. Someone said, what is AA and NA? So AA, it's like drug and alcohol recovery. NA is Narcotics Anonymous. Is that right?
Yeah. Alcoholic Anonymous and Narcotic Anonymous. I'm sorry. I should have put that in the terms to know.
I didn't know what NA, but I went on your website and you guys had it. So I just read it out there.
Okay, I'm sorry. And you got to excuse me sometimes. I deal in this a lot. So some things I think is just general. So there's no stupid questions. Believe me.
No worries. By the way, there's a lot of questions that came in. So by the way, he's putting in the numbers right now. I'm going to read them off and then we'll also post it after the event. So for drug and alcohol, it's 888-995-0640. And he's going to be putting some more resources as well. You know, one thing I really enjoyed that you said in the beginning was like, it's not just like anything could be addiction. You said video games, right?
Yes.
I know a lot of addicted video gamers. I'm calling you guys out.
I think we all know someone who has some of these problems. But, yeah. You know, even though we're making light of this, right? And that's one of the dangers of these problems. Because while we're making light of it, someone losing family members behind them in their video games. Someone is fighting with their mom and dad and won't go to school, won't do their homework, won't respect their parents, their elders, don't mix a lot, won't, you know, their life is just being ruined. They're going to find out later as they get older how bad their circumstances are. But at the time of the addiction, as always, this delusion is overshadowing the reality, right? Like if you don't sleep for 3 days straight, your mind turns into a state of delusion, right? You can't focus. You can't keep, you're not at capacity level, right? each day that you're not getting enough sleep, there's a capacity. And this is why drug addiction and even video game addiction, because what do? You stay up all night playing, right? The delusion starts to set in. The same thing with any of these other things. You occupy your time in those things that are not benefiting, right? So as long as you play video games, you don't get any benefit from it. I know a person said, well, I got dexterity in my fingers now. It's like, okay, I don't know what you're gonna do with that. But you got dexterity in your fingers from playing video games, you know? It's like you got muscles in your hands now. It doesn't, you didn't produce anything. You're not making any income. You're not learning any of the deen. You're not learning any education, anything. I'm sorry, I just went on a rant, but go ahead.
It's all good, alhamdulillah. So what earlier you had mentioned how drugs can sometimes be connected to friends and people you surround yourself with. So my question is, what are some ways to say no to drugs when being peer pressured into it, when being in an environment where they're like, come on, just have a little?
Well, the biggest problem probably is that because it's so prevalent everywhere, that you saying, the problem isn't really that you say yes or no to drugs. It's more likely that you're not comfortable in your own skin. There becomes issues where in this deen, it says we enter as strangers. This deen entered in as a stranger and it leaves as a stranger. We're afraid to be different for some reason. We will have to embrace our differences. Like the sisters who wear hijab, they understand I'm different. I'm not like this. And whether they know it or not, people are envious of them. Mm-hmm. There's a moral issue that the people believe that you are stronger than they are because they don't feel as though they could handle the stress of being different. For the brothers who wear the thobes, the jalabiyas, and wear the beards and try to struggle in this deen, there is a strength in being different because the society forces some similarities on you. They said the United States is this big melting pot, but in reality, it's a giant cookie cutter. Mm. It needs you to not be Muhammad, but you need to be Mo, because Mo better blues, right? Like there's more something trendier in someone named Paul and not someone named Samara, somebody named Ahmed. I mean, you can have the same many syllables, right? Samia turns into Sam. I'm like, come on. It's not that much of a difference. But it's you have to, and this is, unfortunately, this is the fault of us as Muslims, as older Muslims. This has become our fault. We didn't realize that there's no tangible value in this society for you being Muslim. As a community, we didn't realize that there is no, you're not going to get a bigger degree, a bigger paycheck. You're not going to be liked by more people. There's no tangible value for the youth to be Muslim, especially, let alone the adults. You're not going to get an extra badge, your super Muslim badge or anything. You get a pat on the back. And for those who are struggling in the deen, it's even more of a challenge, right? Because when you start making salat, the brother is going to say, you're supposed to have been doing that anyway. Yeah. Right? It's like, man, it took me a whole year to do salat. And you feel up here talking about, I should have did it anyway. Yeah. So for the peer pressure becomes even more difficult because the sister who wears the tight dress, right? There's going to be someone who's going to come, oh, sis, you look so good now. You look so nice. And this is another sister who would tell her that. Mm-hmm. All right. I remember I was with a group of brothers and I wear the kameez, the shirts, the Indo-Pak shirts. And I went to like an event and I put on a suit. And they said, oh, brother, you dress smart. I was like, a suit is smart. So I got accolades. I got praise for doing something the dress is not whether Islam or non-Islamic. I don't want to push that issue. Like I was doing something more Islamic by wearing a shirt versus a dress shirt. But it does begin to seem like you're getting more accolades or more praise when you assimilate versus when you follow this deen.
Yeah.
Right? So when the sister who's wearing hijabs, I want to make sure they know they're loved and they're protected by Allah first, right? To the brothers who are struggling in the deen, you got to let them know that they're loved and they're appreciated. Celebrate their salat. Yeah. So when you're with your friends and the brother says, time to make salat, you tell the brother, thank you. You're a good friend. You celebrate him or celebrate her. And this is where you can find a way not only to remedy the peer pressure, but to find people who are going to push you further in this deen. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, you have to make rewards because there's no tangible rewards. Because once they find there's rewards in this dunya, then you're fighting an uphill battle now. Yeah. The sister already got all like 104 likes for the tight outfit she had on when she posted that picture, right? When she had the nice hijab on, no one said nothing to her. The brother, when he was doing something so-called cool, he got all this accolades and likes, and no one said anything when he was making salat.
Yeah.
And when he mentioned it, they said, you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. So as far as peer pressure goes, it's difficult, but you have to find people who are practicing this deen. I know we talk about this, Jews and Christians can't be friends of you, and that's a whole nother topic. But even if you have friends that are not Muslim, right? They're associates, you go to school with them, they're nice, they're manners, and they have some edab about them, right? Then they're better than the person pushing you to drink. These are the people you can do study groups with. You know, if you're around someone, it's the saying is like, who's the tallest midget, right? It doesn't matter because they're all midgets, right? Who's the best among the alcoholics? They're all alcoholics. Who's the best among the thieves? So a lot of people will use the analogy, well, my friends do this, my friends do that, but I don't do that. I'm not like that. But when you're amongst them and they're all liars, then you're the best among the liars.
Deep.
And this is a very dangerous thing. So when you're choosing your friends, because you have a choice of who's going to be your friend, you don't have a choice who's in your family. And this is a whole nother topic, who's in your family. But you have a choice of who's going to be your friend. Your parents will make some push, but put you in some community, will put you in some environment. But whether you make that person your friend is your choice, especially for the youth. You choose your friends and make that choice a value choice, right? Something of value to you, something that would benefit you, your community, and everybody else. I'm sorry, is that long?
No, you're good. Yeah. I got a question for you. Ready? Okay. I know you said, by the way, this is a miswak, not what you guys are thinking. This is for the teeth. little joke I got. So question is, what if you have a friend that, I know you said you're gonna speak about weed like separately, but like, let's say you have a friend and he's like, yo dude, like I actually feel like I get closer to Allah when I'm high. What would you say to something like that?
So this is one of the things with marijuana, which is interesting. Yep. So all drugs have side effects.
Yes.
So that's why I touched on that, because there's no way that you're going to have something. If you stay up too late, that's why I use the video game analogy, right? You stay up too late. But marijuana is very special, right? Because it has what is called a dulling effect. So it dulls your response. So out of all the drugs that you can choose, marijuana has the longest, how would you call it? The longest level of in the longest time in which your brain isn't functioning at capacity.
Oh, wow.
So if you smoke one joint, your brain goes to 40% capacity level. That means slow response time. And within 24 hours, it goes back to 80% capacity level, 80%. And it takes 30 more days for it to get to 100%.
Wow.
30 days means that you're operating at 80% capacity on making judgment calls. If you're driving, if any of you drive, you know, in split second is a car accident. All right. 80% capacity level when taking a test, if you're going to school, 80% capacity level on responding, not to mention the lower inhibition that it gives you, especially over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Now, they'll talk about the side effects of marijuana, and they always mention memory loss. And one of the reasons why the cannabinoids affect memory loss, which is one of the chemicals in marijuana affects memory loss, is because it helps you cope with painful things. Mm-hmm. Marijuana is one of those things that help you cope by dulling your senses, so you're not able to feel the full experience. Now, that sounds beneficial to people who are in pain, but what it does is it dulls your ability to cope with reality. So the more you dull that pain, the less ability you have to cope with reality. So yes, you had a tragic event, you smoked some weed, and then all of a sudden you stump your toe becomes tragic. Someone said something you didn't like becomes tragic, and you can't deal with it. So, and it becomes this dependent cycle. You numb the pain so much now, like if anyone took aspirin, if you numb the pain, when the pain comes back, it comes back with a vengeance. Not that it was really even more stronger. It's just that you numbed it so much, your body is not able to fight the pain. Or as it says, the pulse becomes stronger. The feeling becomes stronger because something dulled it and your body tolerance level dropped. And this is one of the dangers of marijuana because it's so socially acceptable. And this is another thing about socially acceptable drugs, right? Like alcohol, marijuana, cigarettes, vaping, and all these other things. I mean, when you put it in perspective, one time didn't kill anybody. But the reason that we talk about drug addiction is because so much pressure is on people to fit in, to be normal, that one time turns into a lifetime. This is very dangerous. So even though marijuana has a lower, is a legal drug in most places now, the effect can be a lifelong effect that causes a lot of trauma and problems within your life. I'm sorry, you have more questions?
Oh, we do. I think Sistrada, you want to do the next one?
Actually, I was going to add on to the talk about marijuana. So oftentimes, as you said, since marijuana is a drug that dulls your senses and takes away from the pain, would you say if someone recommends this, you know, a therapist, a psychiatrist, someone like that recommends, hey, you should take marijuana to deal with your depression or anxiety, should we be all like, okay, for medical reasons, it's okay, or should we be like, I think we should take a different route?
Another thing is funny about marijuana, and I'm not going to talk about all the other things that you can find over the counter that can get you high, right? Whether it's marijuana or anything else, you can take and do whatever with and get you intoxicated. But the same thing with marijuana is there's a lot of other options as well. So if someone is prescribing it for you because you're allergic to other things, this should be like a substance of last resort, right? This is not something you enter in like haphazardly. Oh, I finally got the excuse to do weed, right? I've been waiting for this. I'm gonna smoke me a blunt now, right? No, that's not how it goes. And another thing about recreational use, because some people will talk about coping mechanisms, and this is the way they deal with their depression and anxiety, as we call self-medicating. Now, if you're not talking to a therapist, you're not talking to anyone about your depression, then you're not self-medicating, you're numbing. You're not medicating means you're trying to get help with your circumstances. If you're taking any drugs without supervision, You're not trying to get better. You need a third person. This is one of the main ideals of any kind of intoxicant. Your ability to recognize reality slips away. So you might even think you're getting better because it's hallucinogenic. It gives you delusions, but you're not getting better. This is why you need another person to help supervise you in the use of that. So even though, yes, it is a legal substance in California, at least, yes, there are doctors that's prescribing elements of the marijuana plant to people, doesn't mean that it, different elements doesn't mean abuse, right? So if you're putting the CBD oils on your body because you have a strained ankle, no, you're not doing marijuana. So I'm kind of separating a little bit. No, you're not doing marijuana.
Nice.
But if you're taking the...
Says, how about
I'm sorry?
Someone asked, how about using CBD? Any issues with that? Is it good?
Yeah. The CBD oil on an ointment or something on your leg. They take out the element that gets you high, and they're giving you just the medication here. And this is something different. But if someone prescribing the medical marijuana, the smoke, which I will tell you, don't smoke it. If the doctor prescribes for you to smoke it, this is a social taboo. Plus it has some health ramification. There's a pill you can take, right? If this is a necessity. And this is what I don't want a person to feel guilty because a doctor told you to do it and this was your only choice and you did it and now you're feeling guilty. I don't want you to feel guilty. The same thing with most of medications, you get an injury and you're taking an opioid. I don't want you to feel guilty for taking the opioid because it's a medical necessity. But at the same time, you do have to recognize the difference between taking it and abuse. And this is why I use anything that takes you away from Allah. One of the stories I like to tell is the story of Suleiman. Suleiman had these horses. These Arabian horses was the fastest horses in the world. And he loved them. During the time of Salat, he was stroking his horses and he delayed his Salat. And later, one of the leaders in the community reminded him about his disobedience to Allah. And he was so regret-filled for missing his Salat because he was stroking the horse that he gave up his horses. And Allah has told us that if you give up something for the sake of Allah, he gives you something in return. Now, if you can imagine, these are the fastest horses on earth. What could they have given Suleiman, which was faster than his horses? This was the fastest mode of transportation. We'll use that term. What Allah has given Suleiman or gave him was control of the winds. He was able to travel a journey of 3 months' time in the amount of time of the middle of the day. So maybe 6 to 8 hours for the travel of 3 to 4 months. He was able to travel in a matter of 4 to 6 hours. So anyone who's struggling with addiction, remember, you leave it for the sake of Allah. Allah will give you something in return and help you. And may Allah give us all shifa, our healing from our struggles. Any more questions?
So to add on to, you know, how you mentioned how do you fight drug addiction, as someone who does not do drugs but may encounter people in the future who do drugs, how do you encourage someone to fight against addiction?
The main thing about being someone's supporter is, I think I was saying in the beginning, is support them and not the addiction. Supporting them means putting them in places or making sure you're meeting them in places that are productive, where they don't have control. You can't meet the person at the bar talking about stop drinking. Right. I caught him at the bar and I'm going to go in there and approach him at a bar and tell him to stop drinking. You know, no. You see him in the liquor store buying liquor. Maybe that's not the time to talk to him about his alcoholism. You see him at the masjid making salat. Then you got the opportunity not to berate him about his circumstances, but your opportunity to show him the love of the deen. Right. Encourage him to make his salat. praise him for doing the praiseworthy act. And so that hopefully, you know, Allah will provide a way for him out, you know. And once again, don't out people that you know who are having struggles like this. This is a very sensitive topic. You talk to people with authority who won't out those people either, right? So if you know someone and he does have, and he's struggling with addiction, you can approach him, but keep their secret. And if you need to talk to someone about it, because anybody suffering from drug addiction, they need more help than we can give them alone. Even as an organization dealing with drug and addiction and these things, we reach out to other organizations, other providers to get people help. This is a big thing. Once a person develop themselves into some kind of, how would you call it? Once a person is fully addicted in drugs, they whole life is surrounded by drugs. One of the things to keep in mind is we are slaves of Allah. And we will worship something, and whatever we put in Allah's place, we will worship and we'll make tawaf around. Now, when I say tawaf, I'm talking about the circumambulation that we make around the Kaaba, that type of tawaf. That means we will center our world around that drug or that addiction. Our friends will be people who allow us to do drugs. Our associates, we will move in a certain area where we're more likely to find those drugs. We'll be in a certain area that would be more likely. So when we're having someone who's dealing or have that issue, we can't get in that circle that they have created for themselves. We have to be outside of that circle, outside of what they're doing, and offer them a way out. We have to provide a door for them for when they decide that they're going to leave the drugs alone, for them to have a way out. We can't push them through the door. We can't make them stop. We can't beat them into submission, right? We have to do it with love and compassion and just be there. Say, I will support you in something positive if you need help. I had clients who seen me as helping them and started asking for rides. No, I cannot give you a ride. Are you going for a job interview? No. Okay, then you got to find your own way. If there's something, oh, you need a ride to the masjid. Alhamdulillah, I'm there in a minute. Let's go. Right? But if it's something that you can help them with that is productive, that's moving them in the right direction, you help. If it's anything else, no matter what they're saying, right? Because once they're making tawaf around this drug or their addiction, they want to pull you in to the point they want you to do drugs so that you can use your money and resources to support their habit. This is why dealing with someone with addiction is so dangerous. It is so dangerous. It's something that either they meet you in a place where it's productive or you have to leave them alone. Because especially if this is a loved one, you have to meet them in a positive place or leave them alone. And this is very difficult. Imagine your son doing drugs. He's out in the streets and you know someone might kill him. Somebody might hurt him. Something might happen. He might go to jail. All this negative stuff. You don't want nothing to happen to your son. Imagine the mother. She gave birth to this person. The pains of childbirth. And seeing them in that state brings them to tears. They haven't slept because of this. They want to help. But remember, you can't help until they move out of that position of making tawaf. Mm-hmm. Once they stop doing the drugs or move into the position where they something else is at that center, all they're going to do is move you into that center. Mm-hmm. And it's a very hard thing. There's classes or places where you can go for getting help for your sons or daughter, because now once you've been in a struggle for so long, you need help because you're trying to pull them out and all the while they're pulling you into their lifestyle. And it's a word we use called codependency. Codependency becomes a problem because they pull you, you don't do the drugs, but when they're happy, you can be happy. And the only way that that druggie or person who's addicted to drugs can be happy is doing drugs. Imagine that. This is a very, very hard struggle for a lot of our communities. A lot of fathers, mothers, grandmothers. This is a huge problem. You know, we talk about loving our parents. I mean, if you want to see your mother cry, this is the way to do. You follow that path and your mother's in tears. Your father's in tears. This is a very difficult thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, no, you're good. I mean, if you could give a if you can give a message to someone that maybe be struggling right now, or maybe they don't think they're struggling, but maybe they're like, you know what, man, like, yeah, I do some stuff, but it's not a big deal. Like, what message would you give to us kids? Maybe, you know, whether we're in high school or college, maybe we do this like recreationally with our friends. Like, what message would you give us?
So the most, that's a very difficult thing. The most important thing to know is you're loved. You are loved. I can't express that the most. Anything that you're looking for in the streets, whether it's drugs or alcohol, you're loved by your family, you're loved by your community. Even if they don't show it, they do. You know, some of our cultures, we say negative things to people just because the wind blew. Right? We don't tell them we love them, we care for them. And if you don't feel that love, you'll find it somewhere else. And I have to tell the people that they're loved. They are loved. The community wants you to be well. Come on back to us and we will support you with open arms. But don't talk to the uncle who already battered you. Don't go talking to him, right? Call someone and let them know that you need their help and talk to them. And you don't even have to talk about your drug addiction. Talk to them about how your day is going. And because it's a gradual process. And if you think because you're doing a drug, and this is one of the dangerous things about drugs, it has a way of giving you your feeling of 100% capacity while it's enriching you. Wow. It's taking all of you away while it feels as if it's giving you something, and it's not. The more that you do drugs, the more friends you will lose. And the more friends that you gain are the more friends that you gain that will take away from you. And this is the danger. You feel as though you're gaining something. You feel empowered, you feel smarter, you feel like this is helping you in some kind of way. But that feeling is part of the allure and illusion of the drug itself. So I would encourage you to remember that you're loved and that you're going down the wrong path to get love and compassion and to be wanted. That's not where you're going to find it. Those directions are taken away from you. Because any of the narcotics, we can talk about heroin, opiates, and all these other traditional drugs. And we can talk about the capacity level and what it does to the physical body, what it does to the mental state. But what I find with most people who are doing drugs, they don't feel loved. They don't feel like they belong to the community. Maybe you don't feel comfortable wearing hijab. And someone said, you're not really a Muslim. No, the deen is not that shallow. Allah has spread this deen out to hug and love everybody. You know, the Christians don't have the, what they call it, the whole construct of love. This deen has a lot of love. I know we don't show it all the time. I know that we are very judgy, as people would say. We're always condemning people and things like that. But this deen is designed for you to build loving relationships out of trust. One thing with drug and drug addiction, you go further in, you can't even trust yourself anymore. Remember about marijuana, the lower inhibitions? Another thing about marijuana is it lessens your ability to control yourself. So after some abuse of marijuana, it's harder for you to say no. No to the things that hurt you. No to the things that hurt other people. Because remember, it dulls your senses. With your senses dull, you're not even going to respond to a person in the time to show them or to tell them what needs to be shown or told. Because you're dulled. You're how are you sedated? Like, do you want to go to work sedated? And this is what a lot of the drugs do. It sedates your ability to respond. So anyone who's suffering it with any addiction, just let them know that they're loved. Be there to support them. Call and see how they're doing. And let them know that there are some people who care for them and want them to be better. And if it's a person who's just recreationally doing it, I would tell them drug addiction or drugs is a form of suicide. Instead of killing yourself quickly, you're killing yourself slowly. You've taken in poison and intoxicants. And the more you think you're feeling cool or feeling whatever you think you're feeling, it's a delusion. It's the same as taking hallucinogenic, right? You think someone cares for you, but that's the state you're in, your mind state. It's not real. The person who's hanging with you because you're doing drugs with them are only hanging with you because you're doing drugs with them. You move the drugs out, they wouldn't call you. They won't be your friend. The same person that's addicted to any of other these habits, whether gambling, pornography, or anything else, if you're doing those things with these people, once you remove that, they're not going to be around you. They don't care for you for you. I remember this young girl once told me, she said, you know, everybody's getting married and things, but I'm afraid of getting married. And I was like, why? He said, because I want someone to be for me, not with me. And I was like, that was impactful to me. How many of us feel that everybody's around us, but nobody is for me? So the more that you're doing drugs, the more ability or less of ability someone can be for you, because you're for drugs, you're for this, you're for that, you're for video gaming, right? Even we have people who's addicted to sleeping. I mean, how crazy is that, right? Everybody loves a good nap. But once that takes you away from Allah, right, then there's a problem. I'm trying to make it a little bit lighter because I talked about some very heavy things.
No, that's sometimes you need that heart work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Whew. I'm sorry. Is there any more questions?
I think there's a few. Yeah, go ahead.
Just one more, just to add on. You keep on. So since you've been around many people and you've helped many people, alhamdulillah. In your personal opinion, what would you say is the number one thing that leads people down the path of addiction?
There is a study done by rats, with rats. And in this cage of rats, they had one cage, we'll call it rat hell, right? All the rats in there crowded in these rooms and stuff like this, right? And in this other cage, it's called a rat paradise. All the food, all the things that you can give them, right? In this cage, they had these food pellets and water thing, container. And in the water container was regular water. I'm sorry, in the containers was a container with regular water and another one with opiate. In the rat hell, they had that. In the rat heaven, they had that. So in the rat hell, or in the other one where all the terrible things are happening, all of the rats wouldn't drink the water to the point of dehydration and died. In the rat paradise, no one did drunk the water with the opiate at all. They all drank water. So in that kind of study, it shows us that when things are going good, and I used this analogy before, you know, this religion is like a parachute. Not everybody has it, but not everybody's using it. No one even read the owner's manuals. No one's reading their Quran. No one's doing the procedure to keep it up, right? To make sure it has no holes in it. But going back to your question, the ideal of the ideal of making sure that these people are cared for and loved, right, is important. But like in this scenario, the way to avoid this is actually to be there for the people so that they can get support. Reinforce them with deen, reinforce them with love, reinforce them with courage. You know, you can't give them your courage, but encourage them to do good things. So number one thing, once again, is just having good friends around, being around people who are positive, being around those things. Because remember, the people in the rat hell, right? You felt no love. Everyone's crowded. Everyone's on everybody's back. Everybody out to get everybody. That creates an environment where someone's looking for an escape. The other one produces an environment where they don't need to escape. So a lot of times, I'm not going to say because your life is really well, or you living real well, or back to only poor people or people who dealing with trauma do drugs. That's not true. But in a lot of cases, you can eliminate a lot of the problems by being around good people and being happy with each other. It's funny, we're in a season of what they call Thanksgiving. I don't celebrate Thanksgiving, you know, but the ideal of being appreciative to Allah for what you have, you know, and being around people who are appreciative of Allah. And I think that can help steer people away from drugs.
I love it. Sister Nala, you have any other questions? We got a few minutes left. And Brother Wahid, I think this has been awesome so far.
Would you like to add anything, Brother Hassan, if you had a couple questions?
Yeah, Brother Wahid, if anyone wanted to reach out, maybe they had any more questions, like, you know, if they're looking for a place to get help, or, you know, if they're trying to get connected, where could we send them? What could we do for them?
So I'm going to give you Sahaba Initiative. I'm going to put that on, post it on the webpage. So we do have some programs available, but like I said, we rely on partnerships as well. So I'm definitely going to type up Sahaba Initiative. And I know I maybe drew a lot of, we talked about a lot of different things, but it's really important. And I don't mean to sound so cliche, which is terrible, but we really need to show people a much more care and concern. Like if a person is dealing with a problem, listen to them carefully before you respond, yeah, and show a person with a little respect and dignity, and don't take it for granted that they're, as we think, okay, right? Like a lot of us will say, just stop. Why don't you just stop? Just listen carefully. Find out more about their circumstances. If they say, you know, I did drugs once. Oh, do you do it all the time? No, I did it once, but is it like a group of people you hang out with? It's like, yeah, there's these friends I have. I'm like, what else do they do? I mean, don't be afraid to dive in, because a lot of times if you catch someone at the beginning of this, you can pull them out. Mm. And I think that's very important, because a lot of times young people are just looking for friends, looking to belong, looking to be loved, their attention. They're looking for attention. They're looking to be a part of something greater than themselves. And I'm really sad a lot of the communities are not providing these outlets.
And that being said, there's a question that got asked in regards to that. And he says, Brother Gennaro, have you seen drug problems in the Muslim community? Sometimes the Muslim community itself, they think that it doesn't affect us. They feel like it's not really relevant in our communities. What would you say?
I'm going to say this, that everyone knows it's relevant. If you're saying it isn't, or you don't believe, or the simple remedy is just you need to pray and make salat and it's just magically going to go away, that's not reality, unfortunate. There are so many people who are, subhanAllah. I mean, I hear so many stories. I mean, just tragic stories. We don't want to wait until it's our son and daughter who is addicted to drugs to realize that this is a problem. One of the main things is we don't have an engagement with our young people. We don't have community that are really engaged with our youth the way, like, of course, the programs that you're doing here is important, but we need environment where it praises them for being doing good, for following this deen. I mean, it's kind of like if the sister took off her hijab, you said, oh, sister, what's wrong? Why did you take off your hijab? But you didn't never say anything to the sister while she was wearing it. The brother, he's at the masjid, and he said, I ain't going to the masjid no more. And you say, oh, what's wrong with you? Why are you not going to the masjid? But when you seen him at the masjid, he was invisible.
SubhanAllah.
I mean, this brother was going to Fajr, and no one said nothing to him. And he was 12, 13, 14, right? So when we don't encourage the good, then the person will lean to the other side. And I know our community is, we say we're a young community in America, but that's not true. We've been here for a long enough time to know what this society offers us. And as we see, like today, the homosexuality is prevalent. I mean, you can't have a community and not talk about homosexuality, right? You can't have a community without talking about drug addiction. You can't have it because if they go out into society, they'll find out there's nothing wrong with these things. Everybody drinks. Everybody do drugs. Everybody do these haram acts. So if you don't give them an alternative, I remember, and this, I know we're short on time, but I remember when I first learned about the deen, someone told me to, I don't know, this ayat called the Bayatin, the sure reality. And in this ayat called the Bayatin or the sure reality, it says, I used to believe, and this just shows how growth and development happens. I used to believe that the sure reality is Allah will show you the sure reality within yourself, right? And then when I sat with scholars and I sat with people with knowledge, you know what they explained to me is the Bayatin or the sure reality was the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He was the sure reality, but not just him. He provided an option for the people. So the person had to be able to choose the haram and the halal. So before he came in Medina, right? I'm sorry, before he came and when he was first in Mecca, there was only jahal. Now imagine a young Muslim sister, young Muslim brother surrounded by jahal and don't see any other option. This is dangerous. So for us as a community, we have to provide an option. And then when he leaves and go to Medina, he established a state. We gave you the choice of jahal and this deen. So your young Muslim sister, young Muslim brother, where are your choices? You go to the masjid, the guy at the leaving the kutbah, you've seen him at the hookah hut, right? Him and his cronies are still doing the same thing you're doing. And you're like, what's the choice? Haram and haram, right? I'd rather do haram this way and have more friends and prestige. Mm-hmm. So we need to provide choices for our youth. Give them choices that they can understand, right? Even if it is video games, right? And I hate to say it like that, but we got to give them some, we got to put some sweetness in this deen.
Yeah.
So they can learn the shukra or learn to appreciate Allah. And if we don't put the sweetness in the deen, the dunya makes everything sweet. And then in your akhira, it's all bad.
Dang, like cavities. It might taste good a little bit. Then you go.
But you're going to get lots and lots of cavities. We're in trouble. But I really have to say, we have to put some sweetness in this deen. And we have to make this a more approachable religion so that the people can really digest it. Because it's not hard, whether you believe it or not, the deen is not hard. But it's just the people make it so rough on them.
Yeah.
We got to make it a lot sweeter.
I appreciate it, Brother Wade, because, you know, like just in our own community, like even some of our parents, we may not hear this message often, right? So like hearing it tonight, like, you know, maybe sometimes the words come off strong, but it's like, dude, we haven't heard this. And you know, sometimes we need these reminders. So we appreciate your time and helping us learn. This is awesome.
Inshallah, Zakla Kairu, for your help as well and all the work that you're doing. Because like I'm an old guy now, you know, when we first started Sahaba Initiative, I was old then, but now I'm older. We've been doing this for about 12 years. Like I said, one of the young persons that started with 17. So I want to encourage the youth that you can do whatever you put your mind to. This deen is vast. You know, we need institutions in this deen. We need you to be the leaders and grow and develop and become, you know, our leaders. You know, this is a new American deen type thing, right? We revise the deen, but we have revised the deen in a way that according to the Quran and Sunnah, right? Yeah. We make these little nicks and change to help this deen grow in this America. But at the same time, there's some fundamental basic things we don't touch, right? We have these fundamental basic things that in this deen we don't touch. And it's hard to say it, but when I talk to people, they forgot the fundamentals. They're gone. They move all the pieces around. This deen, I wouldn't even recognize them in these people anymore. No. I'm sorry, I'm venting now.
No, no, you're okay. Good. You're good. But inshallah, I know we're online, but I think inshallah, next time we got to do a collab. We come in person. We do something when we are able to.
Inshallah, inshallah.
Sister Nadia, I think you can close it out. I think everyone's been waiting to see what next week is about as well.
Thank you, Brother Gennaro Wahid. This was a very informational talk. We all really enjoyed it. Inshallah, next week, we are not doing the normal. We are not doing the event on a Friday, but we are doing it on a Saturday morning. We will be doing a hike at Crystal Cove in Newport Beach at 8 o'clock in the morning. So please join us.
Nice. So I'll care for everyone attending tonight. Brother Wahid, Jazakallah khair again. May Allah bless you.
Wa yakum, thank you.
May Allah protect us, protect our communities, and protect everyone that joined us tonight. If you're struggling, we're here for you, inshallah. And we'll link you guys up with all the links that Brother Wahid provided us. And we'll see you guys soon, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you again.